When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
All right. Thank you, Bob. How you been? Good to hear you.
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I am going to talk a little bit about video games that I grew up with. Maybe you did, too, a little later in the show. It's because of this Pokemon Go thing.
Oh, yeah.
And so and then I thought, well, that's the latest, you know, version of video games in our lives. But for me, the very, I mean, it's interesting. I am of a generation. I'm older than you, but not that much. I'm of a generation where I was there for the very first one. I was there for Pong.
Pong. What was that, early 70s? Mid-70s?
I think about 1977.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Atari 2600 would be in television, so that's like early 80s.
So what would be your first video game that you remember playing and just loving as
a kid? Actually might have been Pong. I have my cousins that are probably closer to your age, and they had it, and there it is.
It was so mundane. It was so rudimentary. You know, it's just a paddle and a little digital ball that goes boop. And the one thing was, at least the longer you played, the faster the ball got. And you could try and hit it on the edge of your paddle and send it at an angle or hit it straight up. But that was about as, you know, sophisticated as it got. So then I started to download, Bob, all of the different video games from our youth to see if I could tell which one was which. If I played the sound of one of those games, would you recognize it?
Maybe. No, I don't know that one. Is it a Mario thing?
They all have that kind of annoying music. Yeah, that's Super Mario Brothers. Okay. Ding, ding, ding. You're not out there playing the Pokemon Go, are you?
No, but I've seen people. Okay, I have a kind of unusual hobby, boomerang throwing, right? You don't really see a lot of people do that. I'm serious.
Not
I
in
do.
The city.
No. Yeah. But there are big parks, and you need a lot of space. So I go do that almost every day.
Really?
And it's great exercise.
I'll bet.
And it's good for your mind. And so I'll see people out of the corner of my eye looking at their phone, just kind of walking slowly. And a few will notice what I'm doing. Oh, look at that. That's kind of cool. And then they talk to me. And that is neat. And others are completely oblivious to what I'm doing, but they're completely focused on the little cartoon man they're trying to grab.
Well, I think there's a sort of almost knee-jerk reaction we have to any new video game because that's just a waste of time and you're not communicating with people, blah, blah, blah. And then this one sort of breaks that mold. So I've downloaded it and tried it. It's not going to be for me, but I think I can see the attraction to it. We'll talk about the video games of our youth later in the show. Joel Stein wrote, "It's their party and they'll skip the convention if they want to." It's a very funny piece and kind of telling. He's always fun. We'll visit with him next here on WGN.
This is a show about a scrawny guy named Joel Stein. In real life, he writes for a magazine called Time. But now he's got his own cartoon show on VH1, in which he works for a TV show, a made-up one. But even though the show has got a standard sitcom feel, all the interviews with famous people are for real. Joel likes to ask him questions that'll make him squirm. Sometimes he gets punched out, Joel never learns. Hey, Joel, what do you know? You got your own show. Try not to blow it, cause if you're not funny, then you'll soon be gone. Make it fill the time with some more Lenny Kravitz songs. Then you'll be back in obscurity where you belong. Hey, Joel.
Hey, Joel Stein. Welcome to WGN. How are you, my friend?
You played the whole song. That's so nice of you.
Do you get a royalty check when we do that?
Well, no, I didn't write that song.
Yeah, Fountains of Wayne probably going to send me a thank you note.
I'm finishing the first draft of this book I'm writing, and I couldn't decide whether to quote that whole song or not. But I should, right? That song's funny enough to quote in the book.
Oh, it kind of tells your story. I don't think any of it's real dated. Lenny Kravitz, but, you know, Kravitz is cool. It's all good. Yeah, I'd say do it.
Yeah. I'm going to run it. They'd probably use up like a half a page.
Yeah, you usually get paid by the word, so heck, that's worth $100 right there, man.
Oh, at least, yeah.
I'm going to read a little of You to You, not the whole piece, but in the latest edition of Time magazine. You wrote, "For the first time this century, Joel Stein, I will not be attending the Republican convention. The reasons for this are complicated, but apparently they have to do with, quote, keeping expenses low and, quote, drunk the entire time. Which is too bad, since the only thing on my calendar between July 18th and July 21st is my sister's due date, and she already had her baby. It's her second baby, so I'll meet Allison Jade Browning at her high school graduation. The GOP picked 4 days in the middle of summer for its convention because it's a slow time at work. But mid-July turns out to be crazy busy for conservative lawmakers. And then you go on to tell us what they're all doing. Maryland Governor Larry Horgan has an invite on July 20th to go to the J. Millard Taws Crab and Clam Bake, an event that has both crabs and clams. Utah Representative Jason Chavitz is leading 9 members of Congress, including fellow Utah Republican Mia Love and Pennsylvania Republican Pat Meehan, on an overseas trip. A congressional delegation traveling to learn about anti-terrorism efforts is something you'd think the RNC would be aware of. One of the challenges on the party platform will definitely be use Google Calendar. You even mention Senator Mark Kirk of Illinois can't attend because he told our Ro Khan, I've really got to do my hair that week.
And yeah, have you seen Mark Kirk's hair?
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
It's fine, but I don't blame him. He needs to do something. He needs some, like, pizzazz.
So you think that's what it is? It's just unfortunate timing for all of these people? Or are you sensing a trend there, Joel?
You know, since it was printed, John McCain, who apparently hadn't checked his calendar, found out he has to hike the Grand Canyon on those exact dates of the GOP convention.
I think the real embarrassment for them this year of late, of this week, has been the Tim Tebow thing.
Yeah, Tim Tebow apparently is busy. So is Ted Nugent busy. Who else? Mike Tyson, unfortunately, busy. Tom Brady, who you think would not be busy right now, busy.
Huh. I saw that Ivanka's rabbi was going to do the invocation, but they listed him as a speaker. He said that made it feel, you know, political, not rabbinical, and therefore he has now stepped down.
Wow, and it's during the week. It's not even over Shabbat, so he probably had time.
Well, but plenty of people are going to come, and it's going to be an awesome convention. You've been awesome to political conventions before, right?
I've been to all the political conventions since 2000, including one, I think, in 92. So this will be the first year I'm missing it. I'm really sad.
Why is time not sending you? I would think there would be a lot of meat, a lot of grist there for you, Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, maybe time's just done with me. I think they are really cutting back. I think they're not. They used to send, between the Olympics and the conventions, they used to send like half the staff.
Right.
I think it was really expensive, and you got very little news out of those things. So,
Well, and maybe drunk all the time, it said here on your resume. Drunk the entire time.
That was part of the gig. I think they're mistaken to think about it as negative.
That's what you're supposed to do?
Yeah, there's parties all night, and you're at the CNN grill meeting people. And I think, you know, I don't think you're going to meet people if you're not at least a little drunk.
Well, you know, it's funny because the attention is on the speaker, so we always know what the speaker is doing.
No,
and then
that's unimportant. But no one's even going. I only go to the last night. I'm miserable. No, I skip them all.
That's the other thing. I was telling my wife, I said, Brenda, Joel's not going to go to the RNC this year. And she says, oh, that's too bad. And I said, yeah, but he has a history of when they send him to things. Remember they sent you to the Olympics and you watched it from your hotel room?
I should put that in the book, too.
You've got to go do the stuff that they send you to do. You've got to be there, Joel.
That admittedly was a mistake. But I will say, I think I made the right decision in past years at the convention of not going to the speakers. Because everyone's seeing that on TV, right?
Right.
Meanwhile, I went to, like, the last year or 4 years ago at the convention, I went to the 2 competing gay Republican parties. I went to the old school Republican log cabin group, which was having a very, you know, serious luncheon at a place called the Oyster Catchers in Tampa, which is not a lesbian bar. But then I went to like the new fun Tea Party gay Republican group at a bar called the Honey Pot
right
at night, which is a lesbian bar.
Got it.
I went with Grover Norquist, and Coulter was there, and it was a happening.
Yeah. Well,
see, that's better than going to watch these people speak on a stage.
I'm not arguing with you on that. I think you're.
Thank you.
I think my point was going to be that while the speakers are speaking, we know what that person is doing. Maybe it is more interesting to see what the thousands of people are doing that aren't up on the stage. And that's where I think you bring value to Time Magazine, to our radio shows, et cetera. So what's the difference generally between a Republican convention and a Democratic convention, Joel?
Very, very little difference. If you were not from our country, the only obvious difference is that some of the people at the Democratic convention are not white. But other than that,
it's just very hard
to tell them apart.
Yeah, really.
you know what? In fact, the conventions are the same as, like, you can go to Davos, you can go to South by Southwest Festival.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all – it went to Cannes Lion this year. They're all the same. It's the same corporations with the same tents, the same people meeting at the same parties. I mean, like, yeah, they're not so different.
Hmm. But I would imagine that this year, the Republican convention, and frankly, who knows what the Democratic convention will be more controlled, but I think some news is going to be made there this year just because everything seems to be so unpredictable and you know, hostile. Everybody's just so amped and ramped up this year. So,
yeah.
I think
a race war.
It's a race war, you think?
I think we're in the middle of if you ever wondered how powerful white people are, mm-hmm. The leaders of both sides of the race war are both white, which I would have never expected.
About whom are you speaking? Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you going to report on the Republican convention? And what do you think of the phenomenon of Donald Trump this year?
I mean, I usually don't have incredibly strong opinions about politicians, but this is the first time I'm legitimately scared of a politician winning.
Yeah.
Like, ever.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, though. I've only maybe in the last week come to the realization that there's a lot of people that feel that exact same way, but about Hillary Clinton. And that's something the you and the me's of the world just can't get our head around. We can't.
Oh, I can get it around. I've not been so thrilled with that couple. I totally get that.
Yeah.
But,
right.
Yeah. I just think there's a different... I totally get it. I just think there's a different scale we should put these two people on.
At first, I suspected you wrote that these were excuses, all these politicians skipping the Republican convention, and then the real politicians, and that the real politicians were avoiding the convention was the reason was because of its location, Cleveland. And then I realized that the Cleveland area is a fun park for old white male conservatives. They've got the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the Polka Hall of Fame and Museum, the steamship William G. Mather from World War II. I don't know what that is, but I guess that's something to do, huh, Joel?
Oh, yeah. You'd know if you're a Republican.
Larry Flint's Hustler Club is there.
Yep.
And on it goes. So, yeah, I'm happy for Cleveland to get it. I'm
worried. Oh, my God. You think they know? Cleveland's so sorry that they got this.
Oh, you think so now?
Cleveland thought. When Cleveland bid on this thing, this is not what they thought they were going to get.
Well, I mean, yeah.
The corporations bailed. They're going to need a huge police presence. There's going to be rioting. Oh, no. I feel bad for Cleveland. I mean, I always feel bad for Cleveland, but I specifically feel...
Well, if you had to be a city, which would you rather be right now, Cleveland or Rio?
Cleveland.
I feel bad for the people that are going to the Olympics, you know, their once-in-a-lifetime dream, and for that matter, the parents. I mean, the kids will go, they'll be fine, they'll be in the Olympic Village, and it'll
be
okay. We've all scared ourselves, I think, into a hysteria that's not warranted about the Olympics. And, you know, unless you're a pregnant female overland swimmer, you know, unless you need to be in the garbage, I think everybody's doing
that. Was that a new sport? I don't keep track of all the new sports. Pregnant, overland. They always have these weird ones.
Yeah, that's, I don't know, overland's the wrong word. But, you know, whatever it is where they're swimming out in the ocean there, or where the open waters.
I didn't know they had that. They have that? I've been to the Olympics.
Well, they're always talking about these people swimming in the ocean out there. So there must be something where people are in the water. Yeah.
I was probably at my hotel for that one.
Maybe I'm just confusing them with the rowers. In fact, I must tell you, Joel, Chicago has been thinking a lot the last couple of weeks about the fact that we did not get these games. These were the Olympics mm-hmm. that Chicago thought if it didn't get, it was going to be the runner-up for. This was kind of a slam dunk. I mean, Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama and Oprah Winfrey, mm-hmm. you know, were part of the delegation to go get this thing. And then they summarily dismissed us. They said, okay, here's the finalists, Chicago, not so much. And then they went on and gave it to Rio. And I think some of us felt a little cheated. And they've been running pictures in the Tribune Online the last couple of weeks talking about, you know, what that effort would have been like if it had come to fruition right now. And the images just look fantastic. I mean, these beautiful stadiums and this tennis facility and the rowing off the lake and the sailing and stuff. It looks like so much fun. But it probably would have bankrupted the city, kind of like it is the people down there in Brazil, you know?
Well, I don't want to, you know, burst your bubble and ruin a bunch of myths, but there's some talk that the people who pick the host cities, the Olympics, are corrupt. So it may be that Chicago would have been a better choice, but that something went wrong.
Yeah, we have no shot at it anyway. Joel Stein's on the line. You'll read his piece in the latest issue of Time magazine, and in it he writes, it's their party, and they'll skip the convention if they want to. That's his not going to the Republican National Convention. So you're not going to go to the Democrats either then?
No, I'm just going to be here. Call me. I'll be bored.
And do you have any clue as to who Hillary is going to pick for her vice presidential candidate?
I mean, people are now guessing Kane, right? The likable Virginian white guy. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, right.
Like, you wouldn't. She needs white people to vote for her.
You wouldn't pick Bernie, right? No sense in going there.
No, God, no. I spent time with Bernie. You can't pick Bernie.
Why not?
Well, first of all, what does he get you? As far as voters, the far left, she's got that.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
No advantage there. He's super annoying, right?
No, we all love him. We love Bernie.
I loved him as a human being and hanging out with him. But I'm saying, as far as a rigorous promoter of his own socialist beliefs.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's going to be annoying to have around.
He would not
right?
drop that bone. We would have that for 4 or 8 years, right?
Whew, that would be, just being pushed from the left is not what you need when you're trying to be a centrist president.
Yeah, right.
He doesn't get her anything. He just gets her problems.
What did you think of Elizabeth Warren? They've kind of used her as an attack dog lately.
Oh, same problem.
Yeah.
I don't see what you get from picking someone from the far left who's going to push an agenda that's going to make your term more difficult. I think you have to pick, Julian Castro is interesting. He's young. He's... I don't know. She's vetting some guy who used to be the supreme commander of NATO who seems to have been involved in a mini scandal and no one knows. I don't know. I think the Virginia guy is the way to go.
By the way, I'm going to let you go here, Joel, but I understand that my producer told me that he heard you on another podcast.
No, I would never. You're the only radio station I do. That's a lie.
Called Crybabies. That was. Am I understanding this correctly? Co-hosted by Susan Orlean, the author.
Yeah, and Sarah Tyne, the comedian who's married to Andy Richter.
Ah, no kidding. And Crybabies. You talk about things that make you cry.
Yes, you do.
Boy, the podcasting world has a niche for everything. And can you just share with us one of the things that makes you cry?
The most embarrassing one or the most reasonable one?
Let's go with embarrassing.
Yeah, I figured. I cried at the original airing of the Friends episode where Chandler proposed to Monica.
Wow.
That's rough. That is not a proud moment.
I know you're a public figure, but you don't have to share everything, you know?
I know. Maybe that was a mistake. I didn't know people listened to podcasts.
They do. Trust me, they do. All right. Well, it's good to talk to you.
I have a podcast.
No. What's your podcast?
I do. It's called What's Wrong With Me. And I did 5. We just finished them. That's all I'm doing. And every episode, I try to fix a problem with myself, make myself better.
Well, you've kind of dedicated yourself to that in print. You wanted to be a better father. You wanted to be more masculine,
yep.
things like that. So What's Wrong With Me? Is that the name of your podcast?
Yes.
Oh, well, we'll check that out. What's Wrong With Me? And I guess that's available for download right now, huh?
Wherever you find stories, you buy your podcast.
Yes, good. Good. I'll run over to the Jewels and I'll buy myself. I'll go to Walgreens and pick up the handy six-pack of your podcast, Joel.
Yeah, I think you get a free podcast with every purchase of a podcast.
Read Joel Stein in Time Magazine and pick him up at Walgreens. Thank you, Joel. I'm going to let you go. You have a good day, my friend.
All right, I'll miss you.
I don't think he will. The news is next. This is WGN. This is John Williams. Many years ago, Steve and Johnny were supposed to interview Ben Folds, and it didn't work out. So they said, hey, John Williams, do you want to talk to Ben Folds? And I said, sure. And so we had a great chat in the Showcase studio there. And towards the end, I said, well, who are you listening to? What's in your CD player right now? And he kind of shrugged and said, there's this guy, Sufjan Stevens. And I kind of giggled because I'd never heard of that name before.
Now he's huge.
And became a great fan of Sufjan Stevens. I love his Michigan CD. I love his Christmas CD and certainly tracks like that. It's all a signature sound, or at least those were from his Illinois CD. Sufjan is performing tonight at 8:30 on the Green Stage at Pitchfork right after Brian Wilson does Pet Sounds. So, boy, if you're at that, lucky you, right? Sufjan tonight at 8:30. It's time for our Mincing Rascals podcast, and this is something that we always record on Fridays. We drop it at WGNplus.com. You can also subscribe to the Mincing Rascals, and a lot of people just access it from my Facebook page, where I am King John. Eric Zorn and Steve Bertrand could not be part of the group. They usually are. They weren't there yesterday for our recording, but we had one regular and one sub.
I'm Krista McQuarrie, a member of the Tribune editorial board and a column writer.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City.
Appreciate you filling in for Steve Bertrand, who can't join us this week, and Eric Zorn. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing great.
That's not what you said off the air. You said
I'm personally doing great.
Our first topic today is what has happened in Nice, France. As we record this, it is the day after. You said what, Scott?
I'm just, for the first time in my life, I'm not optimistic about the future of the country, of the world. It's just, we're having a terrorist attack a day in the world. I don't know what the answer is, and maybe that's where my lack of optimism comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times you say, well, we'll just wage war on those people and that'll go away, or we'll donate or we'll get out of the way and that'll go away. But I don't see any of those as paths to peace for or safety for people right now.
No. And, you know, I mean, what, we're going to declare war on all of the ice cream truck drivers? Because that's what this guy was, apparently. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's
you know what the common touch is, though? I mean, if you go Orlando, you just pick them off. I think it's people that are not mentally well and have an agenda and have access to trucks or weapons. But I maybe this is the hope, because I, like Eric Zorn has long said, it's easy to attribute too much to these random killings. We have more of them now. Maybe there's a copycat phenomenon, but maybe the planet isn't as hateful as this makes it feel right now.
Oh, I don't know. Have you been listening to the political chatter?
You know, this is going to be our way of life, and it has been in other parts of the world that live in a constant state of war. But you cannot stop a lone wolf who can have access to a motor vehicle and cause this much tragedy. There's no way to stop it. The FBI can't stop it. These are not cells. These are lone wolves who are determined to cause, you know, great harm and tragedy. And there is nothing you can do. And I think that's the scary and frustrating.
Yeah, but following Orlando, I mean, if I can get touchy-feely here for just a moment, I know this will surprise you coming from a Republican, but recovering Republican, I'll call myself. Janine, my wife, it was Friday night or Saturday morning. She says, I'm really, really sad. This is just after the Orlando shootings. The Dallas attacks. And she says, I'm just so sad. I said, you know what you do? We're going to wake up tomorrow morning, and we're going to go up to a baby shower for my niece. I said, we're going to drive, and we're going to enjoy the day. We're going to take 1 hour at a time, and we're going to look up, and we're going to say, the sky is blue. Everything's okay. We're alive. right now, this moment, and we're going to take that one step at a time. And it really helped to kind of take that half step back from the cacophony of all the bad news. And like I said, I know it sounds like, you know, Stuart Smalley or something, you know, and affirmations, but it really helped to just take that half a breath and say, you know what, the world, it may not be that bad.
True.
Let's move on to another subject. I mean, we just can't fix that. The Republican National Convention is going to be,
sorry,
don't laugh, is going to start Monday. And Tim Tebow will not be speaking. If you want proof that there's a disconnect between the party and the convention itself and the campaign and the candidate himself, just look at Tim Tebow, who has a slot scheduled to speak. I was interested in seeing Tim Tebow speak. And then he put out a YouTube video today saying, I've been busy, but I just heard I'm speaking. I'm not speaking.
Oh, my gosh.
He was supposed
to speak on Thursday, right before Trump
right?
gives
That's
his
huge.
Acceptance speech.
I know.
Right.
It's a marquee spot.
Right.
He said, I have not heard anything about this. I want to do good in the world, but I'm not going to do it in politics right now. So goodbye, everybody.
Wow. Well, we've got Mrs. Trump on Monday. She's speaking on Monday. Monday is also Benghazi night, where they're going to focus.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they have little. It does sort
it's
of have a
gross.
Theme. It's
because one night
distasteful.
is Bill Clinton's, you know, peccadillos, as it were.
Right.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Don't
serious
I mean,
as a heart
that's
attack.
What we're reading. Now, again, this has been so unorganized, and we were just talking earlier about this, the Trump campaign in general. You know, the difficulty in getting delegates and having a field organization and having some sort of a on-the-ground presence, and the convention sort of feels that way. They just put out a list of speakers. I mean, normally you would have gotten this weeks ago. His children, all four of his grown adult children, are speaking. And
yeah.
I mean, they are really accomplished, talented people. So I'm looking
forward. Are they?
They really are. They are
very
impressive.
I mean, how do we know that? I mean, we know that she looks great.
I don't attribute this to Donald Trump, but Ivana, you know, came from a impoverished country, and I think she tried to raise them. You know, they weren't the kids showing up to college in Lamborghinis.
The, what is it, Quinnipiac this week? It's 42-42 or 40-40. They're even, the Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton campaigns.
She had a bad week. I mean, you have to take, she really, I mean, her numbers will get some fortification here quickly. But she had, the Benghazi report came out, the Comey testifying for hours about her lying. Whenever there is a terrorist attack or you know, safety concerns are top of mind, Trump does better. So I think we'll see those numbers move.
Your colleague, guys, John Cass, wrote as deliberate a column as I've seen him write in a long time about Hillary Clinton. And he simply said she's not qualified. It's the same line that we're using against Donald Trump. She is not qualified because of her lying, because of her deceptiveness. She's not qualified.
Well, coupled with the fact that she, you know, did something frankly illegal. using a private server to move and discuss top secret information.
She's
that
the most
server
qualified.
Was hacked.
She is the most qualified person who's ever run for that.
That's not true at all.
She's not guilty of a crime.
I think he was making the distinction that she disqualified herself with the lying. Because I agree with you, John, that in terms of just basic qualifications, you're not going to get someone in that post who, you know, former Secretary of State, former U.S. Senator, lots of White House and policy experience. It's almost immoral to be rooting for her when you are rooting for someone who knowingly lied and put, you know, the national security of the country at risk.
The fact that, you know, not charged, that's a hell of a campaign slogan. Not indicted.
Fair enough, but it almost doesn't matter. None of that matters this year, right? Were it anybody else on the other side?
I think that's why her polls are so terrible.
You know, I just, for some reason, have never gotten so exercised about the obfuscation about Benghazi. I think that some of it is a little trumped up anyway. I think that in real time, those people were dealing with something a world away. And if they didn't communicate correctly or 100% honestly, I don't think that's the first time that's happened. I wish they had handled it better. I wish that it hadn't happened. But how is that one incident? How is that one incident reason to vote for Donald Trump? I mean,
it's big, John. Have you read the book or seen the movie 13 Hours for
Starts? Yeah, both. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I thought that was a very straight take. They didn't even mention her. They didn't mention
Correct.
The White House. clearly they abandoned these people. They knew what was going on. They left them sitting on a roof. It was the Libyan army that came and rescued them. And then you have a string of lies. This occurred on a Tuesday, and on Sunday you have Susan Rice going on the talk shows after they have gathered all kinds of information about what actually happened, and you have Hillary Clinton telling the family members of the dead folks that it was a video. It's very distasteful. Now, is what I'm describing enough to pull her base away from her in voting for her? Absolutely not. Is it enough to maybe get those soft middle voters, those independent voters that both of them are trying to court? Is it enough to turn them off? Yeah, it is.
And I think the narrative it paints, both the FBI email investigation and Benghazi, paint her as frankly bumbling and rather incompetent.
That was her friend in Benghazi. I think it has two parts. The first is what happened at the compounds, and then the second one is how did they handle the information afterwards. And I don't personally hold Hillary Clinton responsible for what happened at that compound.
But she's part and parcel of the group that was in charge of that operation. And so I think that's what the American people, again, that's not a gray thing for the people, American people, to see.
Didn't you feel that 13 hours, Kristen was pretty agnostic about her complicity, her being complicit in what happened at the compound itself?
Yes, it was. And I am making a delineation between what happened that night and what happened in the days afterward. And the cover-up, they threw Susan Rice out there. They lied to the American people about what happened. That is extremely offensive.
Were it anybody else that she was running against, then I think this conversation has some meat to it. But it doesn't matter. Does this make either of you want to vote for Donald Trump?
Oh, because God,
that's
no.
Well, but that's what this conversation is ultimately about.
I'm
Scott.
Voting for Gary Johnson, though. So
I don't think that's a wasted vote, although that is a vote for Hillary Clinton. But that's fine. But I mean, at the end of the day, you've got to decide if you're going to vote for Donald Trump as a result of this. Are you all surprised that Mike Pence is going to be evidently his vice presidential candidate?
I want to ask Christian if she agrees, but my take on that is Pence is in an incredibly tight race in Indiana. He cannot run for governor and vice president at the same time, according to my understanding of the rules of Indiana. So he gets a step away from a race where he could probably lose and position himself to be a national candidate.
He brings some sense of credibility to the ticket.
I mean, he, like we said earlier, he's not the Hoosier he should have chosen.
Mitch Daniels would have been great, but he's not interested. We wanted him to run for the White House.
What's also interesting about Pence is he ran a congressional race that got very nasty. He ran a very negative campaign, and he actually apologized for it afterwards and wrote a piece in the Indianapolis Star saying that we have to stop the name calling. We have to bring civility back.
Confessions of a negative campaigner, and I thought, how stand up is that?
Well, not just that, but look, I mean, man, is he running with the wrong guy then?
Touche. Scott Stantis, thank you for joining us, and Kristen McQuarrie. They are two of my favorite people. I was glad that Scott was able to sit in for Eric Zorn and Steve Bertrand. Kristen is a regular on the Mincing Rascals podcast. You can download that. We post the entire half hour. You heard about 9 minutes of it there at WGNplus.com, and you can also find it on my Facebook page, where I'm King John. We'll take a break here. Usually after the break, we take calls on what you just heard. So if there's something in that podcast, that, or at least the replay in part, and obviously we recorded that Friday, they've already announced now, it's confirmed that the governor of Indiana will be Donald Trump's running mate. But if there's something you want to say, 312-981-7200. I'll take your call, 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Pat wants to jump in here. Pat, this is John. You're on WGN. What can I do for you?
Hey, John, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking my call. Listen, I feel you're so far left. The only reason that I'm going to vote for Donald Trump is because Hillary Clinton, first of all, if you look at the Benghazi things, she just let those poor guys die. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And I think that at least Donald will come back and say to the country, listen, you know, we're going to take our people first and then go from there. What do you think?
Well, I had my say on that. You know, and you said I'm so far left. I have never been more left on a person. That is, I just, you know, I don't see Donald Trump rationally, it must sound to you. I don't think I'm left on all issues, but on this one, I just can't see straight. So there's that. Are you married, though, Pat?
Yes, I am.
What is your wife? Does your wife feel the same way you do?
I you know what? She's so against Hillary. Yes, it's not that she thinks the same way I do, but she's so against Hillary.
Yeah, you know, that was the other thing I told the gang earlier today.
And you know, we're in our mid-50s. I think we're in the same age group because I heard you about the palm thing earlier. So it's we're in the same age group. I'm 53.
Well, I really appreciate your listening. I'm glad you sounded off, Pat.
All right, buddy. Take care, man.
Have a good day. Yeah, we will know that we are the same age if we recognize the same video game sounds from our youth. If you had kind of a bowl haircut and it's 1977 and you're listening to stuff like... Bob Ferguson is our engineer today, and I ran through the popular video games of the 70s. And he could, by 2 seconds, it was like, name that tune. He knew exactly the game. I was very impressed, Bob. And then Bob says, I'm sure our producer, Griffin, won't know any of those because Griffin is not 54, he's 24. And so, I don't know, Griff, are any of these familiar to you? If I ran through some of them, would you recognize them? Or maybe you would. Let me pick the most obvious of them all. All right, Griff, tell us if you know what this one is. You know what that is, right?
No.
And I'm not laughing at you.
But the thing is, I do have a working familiarity with these games. But, yeah, by the audio, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to know.
Well, I think if you were leaning into a game for years and years and years, you know, days and weeks and hours and months as a kid, you wouldn't even have thought about it. You would hear that and go, oh, my God, Pac-Man. And then you would have the image of the little thing racing up and down the screen, eating the little balls and avoiding the thing that's coming to get it. In fact, there was one that when I found the audio to this, it just made me happy. It just took me to, like, a place, and I went, oh, that's just such a nice place to be. That sound is what you would hear after you'd put in your quarters or 50 or 75 cents and you would play Galaga. I was never sure how to pronounce that. But that was my favorite game. I love that game. And so when I hear this game, just the sound of spaceships shooting other spaceships or whatever they were shooting up there, I can see the image. I can hope that I get two of the spaceships to fly instead of just one, and imagine the mental strategies that took place, and then the good feeling when you got through one round and now you were at the next level. And, you know, on those games, if you missed, you had to go back to the beginning on a lot of these. I'm not sure that all the video games these days are that way, but that's the way we played them back in the day. And we'll talk more about that in the 3 o'clock hour. We're going to do this show today until 3:30, and then we'll head out to the Blackhawks convention. You heard a little bit about that. The tall ships are in the Great Lakes and making tour stops in places like Green Bay and Duluth and Chicago and Buffalo. And I want to talk just a little bit about something that's been happening with that with you. It's a funny and interesting story in the 2 o'clock hour. We'll do our Vibe Score segment and talk a little sports from the boys from the beat. By the way, speaking of sports, also in the next hour, what's happened to Dwayne Wade's home? Oh, my gosh. News around the corner on WGN. Boy, I learned something new about you every weekend, Bob.
So much to learn.
This is John Williams, and Bob revealed a short while ago that for recreation and relaxation, he's a boomerang thrower.
This is true.
That really sounds appealing to
it's
me.
It's cool.
Are you able to make it to a 360? It comes.
Yes.
Do you catch it?
Conditions are right, yes.
And is it made of wood?
Some are plastic, some are plywood.
Wow. I mean, the catching would strike me as being problematic.
That's tricky. I have bruised hands and fingertips. I have gotten black eyes.
Oh, man.
I went to the U.S. Nationals in West Chicago last year, and it was so cool.
These
guys are amazing athletes. They're doing behind the back, catching with their feet, all kinds of stuff. They're some of the best athletes I've ever seen.
Where's a good park to go throw a boomerang?
I go to Humboldt Park,
yeah.
Intersection of North and North and Sacramento.
How far out will you send it, Bob?
It depends on the one I'm throwing. Some of them will just go like 20 yards. That's kind of short, right? Then there are others that are 40 yards, which is really far, and you have to really wang it.
Out half a football field and back,
yeah.
Huh? That's amazing.
Yeah, and I showed, there were a bunch of teenagers last night who saw me, and they were like, that's cool. So we played You Catch It, You Keep It. I had one extra one. And the one said, I don't know if I want it.
They were doing Pokemon Go, I presume?
They were not, actually. They were at the Latin Jazz Festival in Humboldt Park.
That's fun.
So, yeah, and so was I.
Bob Kessler with WGN Radio News. So July 27th, I think, is the date for the Tall Ships event to come to Chicago. There's a Tall Ships Festival, and it's a bunch of, you know, old, tall sailing ships. This year, having completed a 3,000-mile journey, is a two-scale replica of a Viking ship. It's completely made of wood and is the world's largest intact, if you will. It's not original, but I mean it's a bona fide made of wood Viking sailing ship. So it sails across the North Atlantic and it makes its way through the lakes and to Chicago eventually. But I don't know if you've been following this story. It's had some problem. Evidently in 1960, Congress passed an act that says that if you are going to sail a ship larger than 35 meters long, that if it's going to be in navigable American waters, it has to have an American pilot. I guess that's to make sure the ships don't wreck or bump into the land or the rocks down below. You've got to have somebody on the boat who is guiding it, and that person has to be from America. Those people cost about $400 an hour. This Viking ship sails all the way from Norway to here, and they didn't understand that. The Canadian government has waived that rule, but the American government, the United States Coast Guard, says it's not our choice. This is the law, and shy of an act of Congress, that ship will not be able to come to Chicago, which would be a great disappointment to the people who were planning on seeing it, plus the folks that braved the Atlantic, for crying out loud, that sailed the thing over here. The cost to get somebody on there to make its way around the lake, say eventually to Duluth, is $400,000. And they said, we don't have $400,000. Craig Samborski has been following this. He is the owner of Draw Events and is the president of Draw Events, one of the people that's actually bringing this ship to Duluth, among other places. Hey, Craig, it's John Williams. How are you this afternoon?
Hi, John. I'm great. I'm sitting on a lake in Syracuse, New York, watching this big rubber duck float around the lake.
Okay, we'll get to your rubber duck story in just a second here, Craig.
Sure.
But am I right in my description of what's happened with this particular Viking ship?
Yeah, your description was just exactly spot on. It was a stunning bit of information for the crew of Draken Herald to find out when they were in Toronto that indeed they were going to be charged when they hit American waters with the $400 an hour pilotage fee, and they've got about 1,000 hours to get from where they were in Toronto all the way to Duluth, where I live, and on the very western end of Lake Superior, and then back to New York City to have a celebration there in mid-September.
So they're doing the festivals all along the way. Chicago, they'll get to where you are, turn around, and then go all the way back,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, they're going to do Chicago next, right after Bay City. Bay City's happening this weekend.
And is that where they are now, Bay City?
Yep, Bay City, Michigan, that's where they are. They're going to hang out there for a couple of days to see how much money they've raised through crowdfunding to see if they can pay to get on to Chicago, which I believe they're going to, and I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic by then. We're also going to have some good news from the Pilots Association that'll probably get this thing waived for them and for we have a ship from Spain coming as well that's kind of in a not a similar situation. They did budget for it, but they're under the same kind of rules of having to come up with the money for the trip. So
that just seems so arcane, so unnecessary. I mean, I described a moment ago, my understanding is that you can't have a big sailing ship bonking into things. But really,
right.
$400 an hour? I mean, can't you get that fee waived or something like that?
Yeah, well, so you can, I believe. I've spoken with, well, let me tell you this first. So I did Tall Ships Philadelphia last year and the Delaware Pilots Association out there, I got in touch with them ahead of time to start planning and figuring out what it was going to cost. I had four foreign flag vessels out there, and the guy, a really nice guy I talked to, he said, you know, how come nobody ever asked us to sponsor the event? And I said, well, I've never spoken to you before. I'd love to have you sponsor. And they're like, yeah, you know, if we could have a booth at the event and our name and logo on your advertising, and maybe give each one of our employees four tickets, which I think amounted to maybe 75 or 80 tickets for the event.
Yeah.
We'd be happy to waive our fee. And their fee was $22,400 last year. So they put pilots on there free of charge and had a great time. And they got a lot of benefit out of, being at the event. There's a serious shortage of pilots in America, believe it or not, with the rate they're paying. So these guys were very interested in recruiting at the event.
Mm. So, well, it seemed to me that would... Keep going, Greg.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we proposed a similar thing to the Great Lakes pilots, and they said, well, yeah, we can't really do that. The Great Lakes Act of 1960 prevents us from doing that. The Delaware pilots are obviously on Delaware River down to Cape May and out to the Atlantic. So they said they couldn't do it. And I, you know, it's a little bit confusing for me because I know the Coast Guard sets the rate and I think they set what's the highest rate, but you know, as a business owner, I know if a nonprofit comes up to me or somebody that doesn't have a lot of funds that wants to do an event or something, I always do that with them. In fact, that's one of the reasons I'm in, you know, Syracuse this weekend. I try and work with them. And the law itself is archaic. Everybody admits that. The pilots do, the Coast Guard does. And I think, you know, we've reached the ears of enough lawmakers now that I would suspect, you know, in the next session, we're going to start seeing some changes to this that will allow us to continue to do these great tall ship festivals without the exorbitant fees involved.
So right now they are having to pay the hourly piloting fee, and hopefully either the funds are going to last to get them to Chicago and to where you are, or there'll be a concession, and at least the pilots will be able to essentially charge $1 an hour or something like that.
Right, exactly that. You're exactly right. They, the ship I know has had more than a couple of dozen emails from pilots that have said, "Hey, we'll volunteer. We'd be happy to do this." But you know, it's the Coast Guard kind of tossed the ball into the lap of the pilots. The Coast Guard said, "We'll allow, you know, volunteer pilots on board as long as they, you know, they're licensed properly, yeah, and as long as the Pilots Association, you know, signs off on it."
Yeah.
And we're kind of waiting for the Pilots Association to, you know, come back to us and say, "Yeah, we'll allow this."
Have you been on this Viking ship? Have you been up close and personal with it?
No, but I know about everybody on board, and I have been working on this ship for 2 years. I met these folks in Philadelphia in January of 2015, and I got very excited when I heard that they were planning this voyage, and I think I was one of the first ports to submit a formal offer to them to come. And I'm just dying to see them.
Yeah, it is to scale of a wooden Viking ship, right? I just can't imagine how it's probably not as perilous as it was for people, you know, hundreds of years ago. But I would imagine that there's some rock and play and sleepless nights.
There is a lot of that. There is. And, you know, if you've been on a tall ship before or seen a tall ship, you know, they have a below deck where they have crew quarters to sleep. They have a galley for a kitchen. The Draken Herald does not have that. It does not have a below deck. I mean, it is an open deck ship that sailed from Norway April 26th and went to Iceland, Greenland, the Faroe Islands. What they have on board is they've got a small tent on board. They take turns sleeping under. They have a bathroom, similar scenario, with a little tent over it. And the same thing for a galley for cooking. I mean, these guys are really roughing it. I mean, I've seen their setup, and I just am astonished. These folks that are on board are really making a lot of comfort sacrifices to be on board the ship, I guess.
Kidding. Speaking of roughing it, you mentioned at the beginning of this conversation a giant rubber duck. What were you talking about there, Craig Samborski?
Well, I own the world's largest rubber duck, and it came about as a bit of a dare. I was producing Tall Ships Los Angeles a couple years ago, and I was meeting with some of my colleagues from the city of LA, and they, you know, said, you know, Craig, you're this nice event planner from Minnesota, but you know, you're in LA now, and you know, in LA, we go bigger, we go home. We need to do something really big at this festival. And we think we should build the world's largest rubber duck. And, you know, it was a meeting at a bar. So I'll tell you, there was a few beers involved and I thought it was a great idea. And I woke up the next morning and got busy getting bids on it to build this thing and putting plans together. And, you know, 8 weeks later, this 61-foot high, a little over six stories high, duck that weighs 23,000 pounds was born.
Wow.
And it's kind of taken my life in another new direction besides the Tall Ship Festivals. We're out doing there's a nonprofit rowing race on Lake Onondaga in Syracuse. In fact, the governor of New York rode past our duck this morning. I got some great pictures of Mr. Cuomo in front of the duck.
Well, that's probably more expensive than the one I saw at the dollar store. What is a rubber duck? What is a 60-foot tall rubber? That's just fun to think about. What's a 60-foot tall rubber duck run you these days?
Well, I never really tell anybody exactly what it is, but I'll say it's over $200,000 to build it.
Of course it is.
It's a lot of money, and I knew. There's two things when I built. I'm obviously being a small business owner, you have to be somewhat of a risk taker. Mm-hmm. And I am a risk taker. And I thought, you know, I looked at this from a lot of different angles. And I've really been looking. One of the reasons I love doing Tall Ship Festivals is it's a festival that appeals to families. It's not necessarily like Lollapalooza where it's a heavy metal or an alternative crowd. I wanted something much like a state fair that would make everybody happy and get lots of age groups out there. And that was the Tall Ship Festival, and this duck has become exactly the same thing. It's opened a lot of doors for different festivals we can go to. And, you know, like today, for example, it's a beautiful day in Syracuse. There's tons of families and kids and senior citizens out here enjoying the duck and the rowing races on the lake.
Yeah, but the duck doesn't do anything, right? It just floats in the water?
No, it does. It does float in the water, and that's it. But it's surprising, John. I'll tell you, after Los Angeles, we had over 500 kids from Japan that flew from Japan to L.A. to stand in front of the duck for 5 days and take selfies and videos with a GoPro and post them on Japanese social media.
Hmm.
And so after that event, I realized, well, there's sort of a cult of duck. And, you know, now as 2 years have progressed, I've realized there's really a church of rubber duck. There are people around this world that just love and idolize rubber ducks. It just makes
them happy.
All right,
I got another good idea for you, Craig Samborski. You got a number two pencil ready. I've given you good ideas before. One was
every
duck.
Time I talk to you, John, I take a pencil out.
One was duck battle Viking ship. I still think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Another take on that, because maybe, you know, that's not right. How about duck pulls Viking ship in? But I got a better one still.
I love that.
But that's not even as good as the one I'm about to tell you, Craig. Here's what you do. You've got a 60-foot tall duck. Get like 5 10-foot tall ducks to float behind it, you know, like ducks do. I know you're writing. You're busy, but, I mean, do you got that? Is he writing that down, or did we just lose him? Maybe he's been floored by what a good idea that was. I've lost my guest. We got him back. Craig, are you there? It sounds like you fell over.
I'm sorry if the cell phone service here is not perfect today.
I think you were just blown away by what a great idea that was. I want you to have smaller ducks trailing the big duck like a family of ducks on the water.
John, would you believe me if I told you that I have a 10-foot-high rubber duck named Timmy that goes along with Mama Duck?
Well, now we're getting somewhere. But you're not going to bring your giant duck to Chicago, are you? We've got to find a way to get this thing here.
Yeah, you know, we will. I can tell you, my friends at Navy Pier, Jen and Marilyn Gardner, who run Navy Pier, are very excited to bring the duck there. We're just really trying to find a schedule to make it work. Navy Pier is, as you well know, is one of the busiest places in the Midwest, and they have so much stuff booked there. It's just kind of a matter of being, you know, working on dates a long ways out to make it work. But we're all in agreement that Duck needs to be in Chicago. It's just getting the date figured out.
All right. Well, if I can help you out in some way, Craig, let me know. But continued success. Hopefully the financing or the forgiveness will be in place to get that big Viking ship to Chicago on the 27th. It's a five-day tall ship festival in Lake Michigan, and that's always something to see. And maybe someday we'll get to see your big rubber duck here, too.
Yeah, that would be great. Thanks so much for your time, John. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Craig Samborski is the president of Draw Events. Isn't that funny? Okay, how do you explain that to your wife? Honey, I got a great idea. It's going to cost us a quarter mil, but just listen to me before you say no. Dwayne Wade's house is on the market. He's coming back to Chicago. There was a funny story in the Chicago Tribune about how he could buy the old house that he once owned. The details on that in a minute on WGN. John Williams on WGN. Still to come in the next half hour, our Vibe Score segment talks about all kinds of things. We'll see what the scores are in the Vibe Score segment. The boys from the beat come by and talk to us a little bit. Actually, I'm not sure they're going to be on in the 2:30 segment because they're up at the Blackhawks convention, and we're not going to catch up with them on the air here for their show until 3:30, but we'll bump into them soon enough. Yesterday, I don't know if you saw the Tribune story by Kim Jansen, with thickets of weeds growing above head height, a peeling pool deck, and piles of abandoned TVs, and trash thrown in an empty lot next door, the empty six-bedroom mansion looks more like the crumbling Xanadu at the start of Citizen Kane than the home of an NBA All-Star. But if newly minted Bull Dwayne Wade is looking for a cut-price house, now that he's back in the Chicago area, his former home in South Holland is available for just $350,000. It's complete with an outdoor basketball court, sauna, theater room, pool, two-bedroom guest house, four-car garage. The 7,800-square-foot home comes on a huge private lot and would allow the next owner to live like a millionaire on the fraction of a budget, according to the listing. Wade's ex-wife is selling the home where the couple lived until 2007, according to real estate agents handling the listing. It has not been occupied for years. She lives in Atlanta. He raised their kids in Miami. Initially listed for $595,000 in March of 2015, it has yet to attract a buyer. The home was temporarily in foreclosure in 2014, and listing photos that appear to have been taken during the winter show the home and its grounds in sad state. Since then, agent Greg Wallace acknowledged, "It's got out of control. It's a jungle back there. It's fair to say it's not move-in ready," he said, adding that the pool needs to be relined and the house is, quote, "not in the best of shape." Wallace said, "I would have been able to sell this place 100 times if they had not raised the taxes so much. The taxes on the property were originally $18,000 a year. The property taxes have increased to $58,000. In 2014, that happened. They're appealing the hike, but they say it's just impossible to finance a house that's worth $300,000 when the taxes are $58,000. Though a $5,000 a month tax bill would not present a problem to Mr. Wade, who will earn $47 million over 2 years under his deal with the Bulls. His bitter divorce fight means I don't think that he'll go back there. It probably does not have the best memories for him. What a story. Man alive. All right, we'll pause here. Griff, I guess we don't have time for the house that's shaped like a picnic basket story. We'll have to go to that later.
I think maybe we'll either slip it into Vibe Score or just before Vibe Score. I don't know. or I guess we don't have to talk about it. We'll see.
No, I think we have to talk about it. There's also a house on the market which is designed to
office building.
Oh, it's an office building. And it looks exactly like a picnic basket. There is a house, I think, that looks just like the boot. What's the children's nursery rhyme about the woman that lived in the shoe?
I was saying we didn't have time for this, but now this is taking longer.
You could have gotten this out of the way if you'd just answered my question about the building that looks like a basket. But we'll pause, get you the news, and come to this and our Vibe Score segment on WGN. Bob, I was reading the story in the Tribune. We'll do our Vibe Score segment in just a minute here, but let me just finish this thought. I was reading the story in the Tribune I don't know if you saw it too, about Dwayne Wade's house. Did you
heard
see
you
the
talking
pictures
about
of
it?
That? Yeah.
No, I'll check it out.
Well, you know, it's not that all of us live in mansions the likes of which Dwayne Wade owned. Now it's devalued to $350,000 because the taxes are so high and it's just fallen into such disrepair. But I think a lot of us have seen that happen at some level in some neighborhood where somebody couldn't own the house anymore or chose not to. They just turn the keys in, take their loss, walk away. And then the bank or whoever holds the mortgage on that, they don't seem to be real interested in finding another buyer. And the place just falls to heck. You know what I'm talking about?
I've seen it.
I know. And I've never understood how, say you're the bank and now you own that property and you say, well, this is a $1 million house. And so you're not going to get $1 million for it. And you sure as heck aren't as it continues to fall into disrepair. Now the weeds are growing up. The foundation's cracking. So, you know, people are going in and stealing the copper for crying out loud. And I don't know why. I've never figured out why the banks don't, you know, sell it to somebody for whatever you can get. At least that next person will presumably take care of the place so it doesn't, you know, ruin the value of the house next to it.
And it seems wasteful.
Oh, it does.
You know, it's like excess food, you know, at big corporate events. Why can't we give this away to somebody?
I feel the same way about that. And you know, this isn't just a whole bunch of sandwiches, although we see that even more often, and that is kind of heartbreaking. But when you see a house that it once was a nice house for somebody and then they hit hard times, or, you know, I'm not interested in why they left. The point is the house is just sitting there and then the bank doesn't do anything about it. And on some level, that's what happened with this Dwayne Wade place. His wife went one place, he went another place, the house just sat there, and they said that the taxes went way up. Okay, that's a problem, but I'll bet if the bank sold it for $1, somebody would have bought it, and then at least it's off their books, you know? Then they don't have to worry about it anymore. Maybe they don't care. But, you know, I wonder if the president of the bank lived next to that house, if he wouldn't be a little more motivated to find somebody to take it.
Yeah, because there's pictures on the Tribune website, and it has become quite an eyesore, as they say.
Yeah, even the realtor goes, yeah, it got out of control over there. And that's the thing. Even if you were the bank, if you just had somebody come and mow the lawn, you know, knock down the forest of weeds, just for the sake of the neighbors. In fact, I'm sometimes amazed that the neighbors themselves don't do it. You know, that's easier said than done sometimes, but you'd think somebody could at least maintain a modicum of care for the place. Griff, this other place, so we're just on this tangent about properties for a second, but you found, what was that building you were telling us about?
Well, I was reminded of it, not when you were talking about this Dwayne Wade house, but the giant world's
Viking
largest
ship.
Well, rubber duck.
Oh,
with Craig Samborski.
Yeah.
That's what reminded me of this building in Ohio, in Newark, Ohio. And I'm reading from the Washington Post. If you've always wanted to hang out inside a picnic basket, here's your chance. Sitting on 25 acres of land in Newark, Ohio, a seven-story building designed and painted to be an exact replica of a Longaberger-produced wicker picnic basket will likely be up for sale soon. And truth is, no one knows what to do with it. 19 years ago, when the $32 million building was first erected, employees of the Longaberger company worked there. So it houses employees of the company that produces
I see.
This.
Yeah, it was the company's building, yeah.
And there's an amazing story they go on to tell about how the owner of the company at the time wanted the building to look like a picnic basket. And he would go back and forth with architects who would turn in things that kind of looked like a picnic basket. But he was
No, by picnic basket, I mean a picnic basket.
And apparently in one meeting, I'm reading again from this Washington Post story, he got so frustrated, he went out, grabbed one of their picnic baskets, and slammed it on the table and said, no, make it look like that. And they did. If you look at pictures of this thing, it's really incredible. It's just a gigantic picnic basket. Oh, and nice. Since then, the company has fallen on hard times. They need to sell this building, I guess, but who wants it? It's just a big, giant. It has 75-ton handles.
Just the handles.
Just the handles, and which serve no purpose. I mean, at least the rest of it is a build. It's got to look like something. So why not make it look like a weird picnic? But these handles just are just up there.
Well, you got to have handles on a picnic basket. Okay, I got a good idea. You got a number two pencil handy? Write this down.
Yeah.
They sell it to Oscar Mayer, and then they make a giant bologna sandwich, you know, that's kind of, I don't know, juxtaposed next to it or coming out of the picnic basket. At least it would make sense to have the lunch meat people working in a picnic basket place.
I think you're, I don't know if it's good to double down on the unsellable building game.
That's true.
Although something about living in a big picnic basket seems very soothing to me.
It sounds cozy, doesn't it? You imagine there's going to be peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in there, boo-boo. All right, let's do our Vibe Score segment. Are we going to start with the song here, Griffin? We'll do our Vibe Score segment. It's a fun little feature we do on Saturdays at this time. Tom Hegberg is my cousin. He developed an app with me. We call it Vibe Score. You can get it for free. Vibe Score is one word, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E. We feed you the news and you score it. Let's start with a song. So we vibe a new song each week, and this is the one, I guess, Griff, that you've loaded up for us. What are we listening to here?
It's the Chainsmokers. That's the name of the group, and the song is called Don't Let Me Down. Singing on that is a singer named Daya. Yeah, that's who it is.
Chainsmokers, that's the name of the group, and what's the name of that song?
I'm sorry, Don't Let Me Down.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that. Okay. I like that song. I haven't vibed on that one yet. I haven't listened to that yet. That sounds pretty good. Are they big? Are they hot? Are they huge? Should I know about them?
I don't know anything about them. But so then when I hear of this song, I think, I don't know what that song is. But then when I hear it, I have heard that song a million times. So it's kind of one of those things. It's weird.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
What's it getting? What's the vibe score for the Chainsmokers today?
Right now it's a 66.
I don't like the name of the band. Can we have them rethink it? I just don't think that's a good message to be sending out to our youth.
Smoking is bad for you if you haven't. I'm not crazy about the song. I think it's fine, but I just don't like it that much. I give it a 40. I don't know. What about Bob?
I'm going to go 39, maybe. I've heard it before because it sounds like a lot of other music that I've heard. Sounds like something I'd hear in the locker room at the gym.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a naysayer, but I'm going to give it an 80. And by the way, can we go back to a previous vibe score that I cajoled you guys on? Do you remember the trailer for the movie about Sully Griffin? And
yeah.
Yes.
One of the categories is movies, and we'll give you news or movie trailers a lot of times and ask you, have you seen the movie? And here's a clip. And I was just ripping and railing on that. If you watch the trailer, the story of the movie is a lot different than the story you think you know about Sully. Do you know what I'm talking about? So, you know, he crash lands that plane into the water, and then afterwards they go, hey, dude, one of the engines was fine. You didn't have to crash land the plane. And then he resents the criticism and says, no, I did what I had to do. And they go, no, you didn't have to do that. That was irresponsible, and now you're in a whole lot of trouble.
Mm.
That's the movie trailer. Huh. I don't know if that's really the truth or not, but I thought, well, this is kind of a more interesting movie than I was thinking.
That's amazingly similar. I mean, some crucial differences, but it sounds very similar to the movie Flight with Denzel Washington. Remember that? Because it started with a plane crash, but he saved the flight with some amazing piloting.
He had to fly then, upside down.
Yeah, yeah. He had to roll it over. Yeah. And then the rest of the movie, though, once that's over, is him having to defend the fact that he was intoxicated while saving lives. You know, it's kind of a weirdly similar setup.
Oh, yeah. Well, for sure. I remember when Michael Phillips came on to review that movie for us, and I told him I hated it. And he said, you've seen it. And I said, no, but the trailer's ridiculous. It's a movie about a guy flying a plane upside down. He said, that's just a little part of the movie. It's about more than that. But
so does this change your opinion on Sully the movie? Or
yes, okay. It does. Okay. And again, it sounds to me like now we've blended fact and fiction on this Sullenberger movie, because I just don't remember that being part of the story. Mm-hmm. But it sure is part of the movie. So I changed my vibe. I'm like a 75 on this thing now, Griff.
Okay. Well, and you never know. Maybe they're misleading you with the trailer. That's known to happen.
That's what I suspect. Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay, so what's another new vibe for this week?
Well, we talked a little bit about it in this weekend. The Pitchfork Music Festival is in Union Park here in Chicago. This is in the Chicago category. Performers include Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, Sufjan Stevens, Jeremiah, Carly Rae Jepsen, and a bunch more. So we just asked people if they're there to tell us, what their score for the fest is so far.
We'll get Decker's vibe later on then, I guess, huh?
Yeah, that's where she is. That's why she's not
Well, it's a
us.
Great lineup, and it's a great weekend. It's funny to me, Brian Wilson isn't the person I thought of when I thought of Pitchfork, though. Is he kind of an odd match for that place?
I think it's a pretty big tent, as you always say. And yeah. I think it's true over there, too. There's all kinds of stuff, so.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been my first guess, but I'm not that surprised. I think that'll
be. Do you like Pitchfork better than Lollapalooza?
I liked them both, even. I'm not going to either this year, and I haven't for a couple years, but I used to go to them all the time. And I always had a great time at both. I had a hard time picking one over the other. It's smaller, it's easier to get places, so I guess I like Pitchfork a little better.
I've never done Pitchfork. I've done Lollapalooza a lot of times. I've picked kids up from Pitchfork, but that doesn't count, so I'll probably stay away from that one. Okay, in the music category, you can vibe on Pitchfork.
Yeah.
In
food and drink, airlines are going to start serving draft beer on planes.
Love this idea. I really do. For some reason, that sounds like a really fun thing to me.
I don't know. I think it sounds great, but you can get a beer on a plane.
I know, and you can get a cocktail and a soda. You can get whatever you want. The idea of a fresh head on a draft beer in flight strikes me as a new kind of luxury. I'm
101
up for
me. Can we go above 100? I love that idea too.
That's what I'm talking about, Bob. I don't know why. I mean, I could get that at a picnic. I could get it at the Longaberger picnic basket building, but.
You could also get great leg room without leaving your house.
Yeah, I know.
But it's funny what we consider great on a plane.
Yeah, really, yeah. So we're loving it. What score is that getting, Griff?
79.
Yeah, I bought it.
Pretty good. In sports, the American League beat the National League in the MLB All-Star Game 4-2, which means that the American League pennant winner will be the home team for the 2016 World Series. How do you feel about that? As the stakes of the All-Star game.
Yeah, I've always hated this. I strategically gave it a 49, meaning I'm less than halfway liking it. But I got to tell you, I was rooting for the Cubs in the National League in the All-Star game this year. And I thought, by golly, we could set our own destiny. We could have home field advantage for the World Series. So I found myself liking the idea all of a sudden, because I thought we were going to win the dang game, especially after Chris Bryant's home run. Then we lost.
You sound like one of those Brexit voters that wants to re-vote. I like it if it works out.
Exactly. It wasn't what I thought. So I am a 49 on that. And I'll bet it's overall trending lower than that.
33.
Where are you?
I gave it like a 19. Yeah, I always hated the idea. I like the idea of the All-Star game as a fun exhibition game that doesn't mean anything. But it's fun to see all those players in one place. I understand why they thought. And maybe it has to do with ratings, getting people interested. Maybe people were falling off and this brought them back. I don't really know. But I always thought that it brought a whole aspect to the game that I don't really care for.
Did I tell you? By the way, Bob Kessler, where are you on that? Home field advantage goes to the winner of the All-Star game.
Yeah, why not? Sure. Give it a 80. I've never really thought about it, actually.
You know what? Change my mind. Yeah, I'm with Bob now. That is all it took. Why not? That's a great question.
I got in a little trouble watching the All-Star game. I don't know if I told you about this, Griff, but during the fifth inning, there was a fight cancer promotion. So you know how sometimes they'll kind of do these programs in the middle of the games. Seventh inning's been expanded, and they had a lot before the first pitch. But in the fifth inning, they did a big fight cancer thing. And everybody held up signs, and the players all lined the first and third base lines, and the umpires stood in the infield, and everybody held, and then they panned the crowd, and then they made some announcements. We all need to fight cancer, join the fight cancer thing. Then a woman came out, and she sang a song about power and fighting, and this is all during the fifth inning. And so I just tweeted, really, MLB? I'm not for cancer, but seriously? You're doing this now in the middle of the game? And the Twitter haters kind of hated on me. So then people are tweeting back to me, oh, do you know someone who's had cancer? Do you not care? You know, do you have any idea how awful it is? And I'm like, no, I'm just trying to say I want to watch a ball game here.
Yeah.
Don't tweet. So the moral of the story is just keep your mouth shut and watch the game, okay?
I think that's a great thing to take away from that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where I fall there. I hear both sides.
No.
I'm a 50-50 on that.
No, feel me on this, man.
50 on that.
Give me another one.
In celebrities, Kristen Stewart thinks the time is now for a female James Bond. What's your score for a female James Bond?
I gave it an 89. I think that's why not have a Janet Bourne? I love this idea. Well, how about you, Griff?
Yeah, I think, go ahead. It's received considerable blowback with the Ghostbusters going all female.
Yeah.
A lot of people are mad about that. So, I don't know, be ready for a fight, I guess. It's getting a 59. People are not crazy about this idea.
Here's how I reinterpreted that question. My attitude is, you could do a female James Bond. But really what I'm thinking of is just give me sort of a James Bond-like character who's female. That's what I think would be really fun.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, who's not the Catwoman. Or, you know, I mean, don't make her sort of the second player of another franchise.
I hear that. Yeah, that's a good point.
By the way, one last one, Griff. We asked, what's your vibe for the Cubs in the second half? And it's getting good scores. I was the only one that I think was pulling the group average down. I gave the Cubs in the second half my vibe after the end of the first half, where we went, 6-15 over our last 21 games going into the break. I gave them a 75, but it had lots of 90s, some 100s. So the Cubs fans out there are still vibing high. They're still very optimistic.
It's a long season.
That's Vibe Score. We do it on Saturdays, and it's an app that you can download for free. Vibe Score is one word. We'll feed you the news, ask you a scorable question, and report back to you on Saturdays. More to come on WGN. Thank you, Bob. It's 3:09, or what time is it?
3:07. I have here.
Yeah, I got it.
This time zone.
Clock. That's not exactly right. Well, thank you, Mr. Kessler. By the way, so what was the location? The Naval Institute that they said they'd. We're having a jump start on the music.
Oh, yes.
We'll get to that in a second.
That would be the National Guard facilities.
For no Pokemon Go.
Yeah. No Pokemon
Go. The list is growing of places you're not supposed to expect to find Pokemon or Pokemon. And if you do, please don't go there and play the game anyway. It also includes the Holocaust Museum, Auschwitz, and the Arlington National Cemetery. I don't know if those things actually appear there or people think they do. The way the game works, it tells you where to go. Evidently, it's telling you that there are ones to be had in these locations, but the locations are asking you not to go there. Arlington National Cemetery. Don't go play your game there. As well as the Holocaust Museum. I don't know exactly how those things get to the locations they do, but you would think somebody would say, this isn't cool. I also saw on The Onion, Pokemon Go is introducing gamers to the horrors of physical exercise. And then in typical Onion style, it reads just like a regular story. And then they cut to a bunch of tweets from Pokemon users who are saying how angry they are because they're having to get out. This one says, "My legs are actually pretty sore now. Thanks a lot, Pokemon Go." But the first time I put that on my phone, I thought, oh, this is fun. I'll give this a try, be part of the craze. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't get my avatar to work. And it was because I wasn't going anywhere. And it would give me messages or signals. It would say something like, you must play in actual space or something. I wasn't paying attention. But you got to get up and move around, which to me is not a terrible thing. Actually, we asked people on our Vibe Score segment or on the Vibe Score app, what do you think of this? And it's getting low scores, and it should not. It made me think of some of the games that I played as a kid. And by that, I mean somebody in my 70s or in the 1970s and 80s. when you go to the wiki, you find this. Since the 1980s, video gaming has become a popular form of entertainment and part of the modern popular culture in most parts of the world. One of the early games was Space War! Which was developed by computer scientists. Early arcade video games developed from 1972 to 1978. During the 1970s, the first generation of home consoles emerged, including the popular game Pong. The golden age of arcade video games was from 1978 to 1982. Think, where were you in 1978? Were you in high school or college? Had you graduated? I don't know where you were. But if you can spot yourself, you'll realize, yeah, that's the sweet spot. That's when we would want to go to the mall. Or if there was a bar, a restaurant, or some place that had those, the kids would congregate around the arcade video games, and you'd grab some quarters and you'd play, and that would be fun. Or maybe somebody in your neighborhood was the cool house, and they had either an arcade game or one of the first home consoles. The Hermans, Bonnie and Gary, lived next to us in Joliet. They were the cool couple in our neighborhood. They had a neat bar downstairs. They had gadgets and toys and cool stuff. And they were the first ones with the Pong game. And we would go over there. Gary and Bonnie did not have kids, but they did have a Pong game anyway. And it was such a treat to go to their basement and to play. Play Pong. And you could kill an hour doing that. And then somebody else would want to play too. And it was just so much fun. I mean, it's just hard to imagine that that could be so much fun. We're so sophisticated about it now. But that was a really big deal in our neighborhood. The first known game incorporating graphics that updated in real time was a pool game programmed by William Brown and Ted Lewis, designed specifically for a demonstration of a computer at the University of Michigan in 1954. Perhaps the first game created solely for entertainment rather than to demonstrate the power of some technology was Tennis for Two. It was a video game like Pong designed by William Higginbotham at the Brookhaven National Laboratory in 1958. It was designed to entertain the general public at Brookhaven's annual series of open houses. The inventor of the game never considered adapting the successful game into a commercial product. This is 1958. It would have been impractical with the technology of the time, of course. Eventually, the computers got a little more sophisticated. There was a little more power, and so you were able to get some of these things. So if I played the sound, and I think this really is sort of drilled into people's hard drive, it will end up taking you back to a place and time. If you heard this, for instance. Do you know where we are? If I play that, you say, oh, that's Super Mario Brothers. Hey, Mark, it's John. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Putting the motor back together. It could be better. But anyway, I was enjoying the old video game stuff. There was one that my folks got us, must have been 72 or 3. It was Odyssey. And, boy, was that thing a dinosaur. And then all it did was, like, the Pong thing or you could switch the mode and make the little dot on the screen go wherever you wanted it.
Oh, nice.
And then there were those static cling sheets you would put over your TV screen.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And then, you know, by today's standards, I was more of a kid in the garage screwing around. I didn't have much to do with it, but my sisters did. And, you know, at the time, they really enjoyed it. And we still have it in the original styrofoam packaging and the cardboard sleeve.
Really?
It's a little tattered, but it's all still there.
Does it function if you plugged it in hooked it up to a TV? Have you ever messed around with that or tried to see, is that a collectible? Is there value to that?
I don't have internet, and I can't, you know, I should.
Okay,
because why would it?
I'm going to look this up.
Run away in the attic when somebody else could enjoy it.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you got to get that. You got to sell that thing, I would think.
I know it. You know, it's like take the money, sell it, and let somebody enjoy it, and take the money and buy what you want.
So it's called Odyssey?
Odyssey. Yeah.
Odyssey. And you think in 1972, 73, something like that, huh?
Somewhere in that neighborhood, yeah.
Wow. Oh, what fun.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, we didn't play it a whole lot. It was just, my dad had gas stations and made good money and got us kids toys and whatnot, and some we liked, and that just wasn't my cup of tea, but.
That's funny. I'm glad you called. That's crazy. Well,
why don't you buy it, and I'll be glad I called.
Well, hold on just a second. I want you to just make sure there's any other details you'd give to my producer, Griffin, here in a second, and then I'm going to make sure that I'm going to look it up and see what this thing is, okay?
I'll try and see if I know any more about it.
All right, hold on a second, Mark. We'll put you on hold. We'll pick up your phone call, too. You can join us, 312-981-7200. I think I was running some of these by you, Bob Kessler, and you weren't tracking on them the way I was, were you?
I got the Mario one. I did not get Galaga, yeah, but I remember that game. But I don't remember the music. That's just Pong there.
That was us playing Pong.
Yeah,
Herman's basement. Okay, and then you've got to remember this one, right? Let me see here. Let me see if I hit the right button.
Oh, yeah. That's Pac-Man. The Waka 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 thing.
The Waka Waka. And then, yeah, so this is the one that was just a sweet spot in my life. And now I'm shooting the spaceships playing Galaga. Did you play this game at all? How about this one? Do you know what's happening there?
I don't know that one. Mr. Do, I don't know.
That's Tetris, and that's a bunch of blocks falling down into space.
Yeah.
Did you play the game Breakout at all when you were a kid?
Where
you
Breakout, yeah.
Bounce the ball up against the wall, the bricks would go away, and hopefully you could get it all the way through, and then it would sort of break out from the opposite end as well. That's not a good description, but if you can remember it, that's sort of what it did. That was the idea of that game. And then a lot of them were like this. A lot of the games, this. And you've got that boomp, 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 boomp of the army coming to get you. And you're playing Space Invaders, and you're trying to shoot them down before the whole army of them, in each successive boomp, comes down one more row, until they finally land on top of you and squash you. So many of them were just real basic like that, some sort of background, and you would battle against or around it. You'd either fly your ship or jump your frog or run your person. It's not like you had an avatar or anything. My number is 312-981-7200. We'll pick up a couple of phone lines. Tell me the game that you played that controlled you as a kid on WGN. Nice day for Pitchfork in Chicago. Earlier we sampled some Sufjan Stevens, Brian Wilson. Tonight on the green stage, Blood Orange here, getting ready to play in a couple of hours. Pitchfork in Chicago. Boy, a lot of things going on today. Couple of calls as we sort of listen back to and remember some of the games that were our games, the first wave of video games, arcades, and then the ones that you got these gigantic consoles that you'd hook up to your TV, and then Game Boy came along, and you thought nothing would get slicker than that. Now who uses a Game Boy? Griff, what's our next caller's name? Let's go to Sue. Hey, Sue, it's John. How are you?
Hey, hi. Hello, King John. And I want to say, hi to your son, Griff, too. I've been a long, long GN listener, and it's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
And you're welcome, and thank you. And my very fondest memory of really my first video game was I was about 12 years old or so, so that was about 1980. My sister was attending Augustana University there near Iowa. Anyway, so I went to go and visit my sister in college, took the Greyhound bus, and it was a big thrill. We went over to Whitey's, which was a famous ice cream place there in Iowa, and anyway, got to play Pac-Man, and that was just very, very fond memories for me.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's the thing I was doing this week was, A, marveling at how sophisticated the games weren't, and then just remembering how much fun I had playing those simple games.
Exactly. It was big thrill, you know, for us. It was like, wow, you know, that was, of course, the height of gaming technology at that time.
It was, and there was nothing like it before. It's not like somebody came out with a new board game or a new race car set or a new Barbie doll. There was nothing else like this. You were playing a virtual tennis game.
Yep.
You know, it was. It just felt different, and now you want to play it just kind of for the novelty of it because they're so crude. But that was fun back in the day. Boy, well, thanks for the call. I appreciate your listening.
Well, thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah. What was your game? Griff, so you are a little bit younger than Bob Kessler and me. Does this relate to you at all? Do you have any association with this sort of stuff?
Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, it was more like Nintendo 64.
So what would the game be then that you would play? Well, it would be more like you were playing Madden football or something, right?
Well, yes, a lot of that. That was PlayStation and stuff. But Nintendo 64 is like Mario Kart, so like the racing game with Mario, Mario Tennis. A lot of Mario stuff for me, and like James Bond games.
I didn't remember.
GoldenEye.
Really?
Sure, yeah.
That's funny.
And a lot of people still play them. You still got like the cartridges and stuff, and I always remember, you know, to fix it up, you got to blow into it for some reason. If it's not working, you
clear the lint out of the
take it out.
Or something, yeah.
It's fun to think of technology that you just blow into and it
now it works.
That
again.
Won't make your Pokemon Go work any better, I don't think. But
well, there was a place on Michigan Avenue, not too far from the Tribune Tower, and this is my memory, and I don't know exactly how all the pieces fall into place, but there's a big screen TV, and on that TV, they were showing the first generations of, I guess it was Madden football, and so it looked so realistic, and that you were controlling these players, and they looked like players that you knew. And I remember that being a real game breaker for me, too. A real, like, technology leap where I went, holy cow, look at how realistic that is. And you can control them. That was, you know, mind-bending.
I'm sure if you looked at those same ones now,
exactly,
you'd be pretty surprised. But if you looked at the stuff they're doing today, you'd be again amazed. You know, it's one of those, you know, it's always marching forward.
Yeah, I wonder if it's in a way come 360 with the Pokemon Go because, you know, that's a map, but really the avatar that's walking isn't real sophisticated. You're looking at it on a tiny screen. And now, instead of, you know, marveling at the imagery on the phone, it's now you doing the activity. You know, it's kind of changed, kind of back to where we were once upon a time where you used to get out and move around.
Yeah, I'm not a huge gamer, and what I do is not indicative of gaming trends by any means, but I do find that the games that I tend to play most are incredibly simple.
Yeah, right.
They almost are like Pong or just a couple steps above, you know, just mindless.
Well, I think where it really changed for a lot of us was when you first played a video game or an arcade game. It was pretty much arrow up and the thing goes up, or handle down and the thing goes down. You could physically drive. It was very easy to understand how to work a Pac-Man game or a Galaga game or a Tetris game. Any of those you could learn in a second. And if you didn't stay current with the new versions of video gaming, then somebody would give you a controller in your hand and it would have 10 buttons. And you'd say, well, how do I make him run and jump over the defender and catch the ball? Well, you got to do this, 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 this. And you suddenly realized that's going to take more time than you have right now. You know, I want to just pick it up and be able to play it competently right away. And when they got too sophisticated, I dropped out. The boys are getting ready from the Blackhawks convention. That's why I took the first half hour of their show. This is John Williams. I'm normally out of the way at 3. Here it is now, almost 3:28. So let's catch up with them in a couple on WGN.